The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
All theoldorchard.com.
How are you, Pierre?
I'm really well, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. So, what else could you tell us about that play in particular?
I'm wondering if it deflected off the shaft of the defender's stick for Boston, that maybe threw Tuca a little bit off. But if you think back one play later off the initial draw after the goal scored by Tyler Johnson, Dan Girardi almost scored from center ice.
Yeah, his head
wasn't ready for the shot. It hit the post.
Yeah, he was still thinking about that goal. He was not moving. He was sliding. He was swimming
a
little.
I'm saying there was something that got to him, and I don't know what it was, because he came up with some 10 bell saves in the third period just to keep that thing close for the Bruins to have a fighting chance. And then obviously, the penalty, no penalty on Marchand after the Bruins made it a one-goal spread. Pretty major swing moment of the game, and the other one was obviously the phantom high stick on Hedman. Stuff happens over the course of a game, but Tuca got it back together after he kind of had some foibles in the second period.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you specifically, I'm glad you mentioned that, specifically the high stick call. Now, they went out and checked, right? And he was bleeding a little bit around the eye.
Yeah.
It's not an audit.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, people think it's an automatic, that if you draw blood, it's 4 minutes automatically. It's not necessarily, it's up to the discretion of the official.
That is correct. The other thing is there were four sets of eyes on the ice. There were two referees and two linesmen. That was right off a face-off play. Now, I will say, in the interest of being fair, that happened really quickly. And initially, if from the angle I was at, it looked like Brad Marchand's stick actually came up because he made the play on the puck. So that's where I was screened out, but that's who I saw. So I said that. Then we went to commercial break. And during the commercial break, I had an opportunity to break the tape down. I said, I need to see that play again. So they showed it to me, and then I saw clearly that Pasternak elevated Hedman's stick, and Hedman's own stick actually hit him in the face. So Pasternak, he influenced his stick going up, but that's not a penalty to him. It shouldn't be a penalty to him. And then you can see his reaction. Again, I don't know what you saw on your feed, but that's what we showed after having the luxury, and I stress this, the luxury of a TV timeout. Now, and so we could break it down more fully than maybe on 2 or 3 seconds of judgmental time. That this is what I've been saying since the coach's challenge came in. They always wanted to have criteria. I thought there were two things that needed to be in there that have not been put in there. One is the puck over the glass. I think that should be challengeable for the coaching staff. And the other one, and I've told you this for a long time, is friendly fire high sticks.
Yep. Yeah.
Because if the coach could challenge, and I've been telling you that right from the start, because I remember when they put the coach's challenge in and I was asked, what do you think should be part of the criteria? And that's two of the things that I told them. But in particular, the friendly fire high sticks, because I know how fast it goes down there.
Yeah.
And they still have chosen not to do that, Mitch.
So some iffy calls, to be sure. But on the other hand, they did have a chance with almost a full 2 minute 5-on-3 early, and Tampa killed it.
Oh, listen, full marks at Tampa. They can't control the officiating. Tampa Bay played a tremendous game. I was really impressed, obviously, with Braden Point. He got challenged by his coaching staff. He probably challenged himself more difficultly than maybe the coaching staff did. He had a tremendous game. Ryan Callahan was off the charts good. Not a little bit good, off the charts good. Cedric Paquette, Chris Kunitz, those guys, the energy players, Callahan, that line was so effective as a fourth line for Tampa. There were so many good things if you're a fan of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I would say that, nobody should take anything away from them. Yeah, the Bruins had an opportunity, no question. But, man, I was really, really impressed by Tampa. And their fan base was electrifying. They were great.
All right, so they even it up, heading back to Boston. We'll get to the Canadiens, the development in their front office with Rick Dudley, moving on with Pierre Maguire in just a moment.
Joined at center by Carlson. He speeds up the right side. Carlson shoots, and he scores! William Carlson wins it! Carlson makes it 4-3 nights in overtime!
Blessing coming here into a tough environment in San Jose. And, the first part of the game last night, they took it to us pretty good. Marc-Andre Fleury was really, really key for us in the first 30 minutes of that hockey game. And then in the second period, we got our legs going and we had some power play opportunities to take advantage of that. And So it was that was big for us.
There is Gerard Gallant on the air here on TSN 690 today with Chris Nyland and Sean Campbell after his team took a 2-1 lead in their series against San Jose. Pierre, how do you explain William Karlsson?
Well, he's a tremendous player. He always was coming into the NHL. He's a first-round draft pick. It's not like he fell off the turnip truck. He was always a good player. It depends on the role that's created for you. It depends on how the coach utilizes you. Sometimes you get pigeonholed in an organization. I'll give you a case in point that's very similar to William Karlsson, is Sean Couturier.
Right.
He never had a season offensively in the NHL till this year like he had because the coaching staff turned him loose. They moved Giroux over to the left wing. They moved him to the top center ice position rather than playing in the three hole. So rather than being a checker, they said, go get offense, and he did. And I think the same thing happened for William Karlsson. Now, to be fair, I don't think William Carlson's going to have the same shooting percentage next year like he has this year or has had this year, but I do think he's going to be a very strong and important offensive player for the Vegas Golden Knights for a long time.
Gosh, he is so skilled. Man, it's just, I mean, to see how he scored that goal, not only putting it under the crossbar, but in full flight, in stride, taking the pass. He set up guys. He's just a highly skilled guy. And
you're right. You're right.
Yeah, you were gonna add something there?
No, I was just going to say, Mitch, if you look at some of the other players that are there, Jonathan Marchessault, look at how he plays. Never drafted in the National Hockey League. You know, you look at a lot of the forwards that are there right now. Guys, people said, oh, that guy can't play, or that guy's not that good. Alex Tuck was a first-round pick of Minnesota. You don't think Minnesota could have used him? Look at Alex Tuck. I mean, there are a lot of teams that made a lot of mistakes with the expansion draft last summer, I can tell you that. There are a lot of teams that did.
Now, Pete DeBoer, Pete DeBoer said after the game, I kind of like what he said. There's no panic at all. He said, I feel that we're building. We still haven't played our best hockey. We're moving in the right direction. Do you think he really believes that?
Oh, yeah, I do. When they were down 3-1 in that game in the second period, I was like, you know what, this is going to be a tough night for San Jose. I had just finished doing our game, obviously, in Tampa, so I had a chance to just sit in my room and watch it. And calm down and try to just, you know, take the edge off and get ready for an early morning flight. But as I'm watching it, I'm going, you know, even though it's 3-1 and Vegas had a couple odd man rush looks and they weren't able to capitalize on them, these guys might be able to come back. And you're seeing that. You know, Logan Couture is making a difference in this series. Brent Burns has made it, especially since it's gone back to San Jose, Brent Burns is now making an impact on the series. I do think they're playing better, but the one thing that's got to be haunting to them, they thought they had, when they tied that game up last night late in the third, Mitch, and they went to overtime, I truly believe San Jose said, okay, we got them. These guys are going to melt. And they didn't. And it speaks to the character and the coaching of Gerard Gallant and the character of the team.
Earlier today on a conference call,
I just felt like it was a time for a different sort of challenge. And the staff in Montreal, it's a pretty solid staff, and moving forward, they know what they're doing. And I just thought I needed it. I needed a change personally, but I will miss those guys. I miss Burge. Burge is a good man, an honest guy, and he's been a friend for quite a while now. I will miss everybody there. I don't know what I could have done differently exactly. I just wish that it had gone differently because I know it. You know, Mark's a good man, and he takes his job so seriously. And he took a bit of a beating this year, and he didn't deserve it. I wished I could have helped him a little more. That's all. I just wish the results were a little different than this year. That's all. And I know they will be. I know they will be in the future.
All right. There's some genuine frustration and sadness in his voice. You know, I know that Marc Bergevin himself has said, look, it comes with the territory in terms of he didn't deserve it. But there is that helplessness, right? Rick Dudley has moved on. He himself says he's not sure, other than reporting to Don Waddell, what his full role will be in Carolina. What do you make of all of this?
I don't know why you would take a job and leave an original six organization if you don't know what your full responsibility is going to be. That would be my first premise. That's the first time I heard that soundbite. But that's a little different. There's a long tradition in history between Donnie Waddell and Rick Dudley, going back to the old IHL and even to Atlanta in the NHL. so they've had a tremendous relationship over time. It'll be interesting to watch how it manifests itself going forward in Carolina, just because of the way some of the general manager search has gone down, and potentially maybe Donnie Waddell takes on two roles, president of hockey operations and general manager, and Rick Dudley is the guy who is the eyes and the ears on the road. I don't know, but, you know, if you don't know your entire situation and you're in a pretty healthy one in Montreal, considering your relationship with the general manager, it's a little bit different to say, I don't really know what my role will be if, you know, you choose to leave. That's a little different.
Is it possible, and I don't know this, but clearly when Jeff Molson said, announced that Marc Bergeron will be returning with some adjustments. Now, we've seen the first of a couple of adjustments on the coaching staff. I would assume he also meant adjustments in the front office, and his contract was expiring in June, so he kind of could read the tea leaves here.
Well, yeah, but I don't think, and you heard him talk about his respect for Mark, which I really appreciate. That's how you're supposed to be in an organization when you move on, in particular, gracious to the people that gave you the opportunity to begin with. And I think that, you know, Mark would have made sure that he would have had Rick there if Rick wanted to stay. So I don't know, again, if that was the adjustment they're talking about. I think one of the things that really has to be addressed in Montreal, it's not everybody's pointing at the amateur draft. Listen, you don't fix that in a year. Trust me. That takes time. That takes a lot of time. What you need to do is evaluate your professional players a lot better. They have really missed. You know, you can go look at Kovalev, you can look at Semin, you can look at the trading of Subban, you can look at the trading of McDonough. I mean, those weren't for amateur players, those were for professional players, those trades. So this goes back a long way. They've misevaluated NHL players more than they've misevaluated amateur players. And the problem is in the cap world, and this has always been my theory on it, in the cap world, you're not just making a player mistake. You're making massive mistakes in terms of managing your cap. It's not, you know, it used to be $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 mistake. Now you're talking about multiple millions of dollars of mistakes. And one of the glaring ones, and it potentially led to the trading of PK Subban, was the bridge contract that they gave Subban. And I said to the day they did that, disaster, terrible. Going to cost them big time. Told you that day when it was announced that Subban signed a bridge. That's part of evaluation of professional players. You need to know who you can sign long-term and who you need to give a bridge to. That player didn't need a bridge. If you were going to give him a bridge, you should have traded him before you gave him the bridge.
Well, they never, it's pretty obvious that they, Marc Bergevin, I don't know members of his staff, but Marc Bergevin, Michel Therrien were never committed long term to PK Subban. Is fine. That's fine.
Absolutely. Yep. But then make the move.
Yeah.
Don't sign him to the multi tens of million dollar contract, which they did, and then have to say, okay, well, this is the only trade we can make because they're the only team that can actually fit him in, and we can fit their guy that we're taking. And I don't mean their guy. Shea Weber's an honorable person and a very good player. He was, and in his prime, he was as good as there was in the league. He's not in his prime anymore. So that's, you know, again, that's rehashing old stuff. But this is my one point, again, in a roundabout way. Everybody talks about the amateur stuff in Montreal. You got to address the professional side of it. They've made some major professional acquisitions that have been flawed.
Well, and Rick Dudley, look, Rick Dudley, I know he's got a lot of respect around the league, and he's a lifer, and he loves his job, and he's traveled a lot, and he works hard, and he puts in hours, but the bottom line is results, and he's been part of some front offices that, frankly, when you look back, you're going like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, yes, I do, but I'm going to say this. Because I respect people that are in the field, boots on the ground. I'm not a Monday morning quarterback. I'm not going to say, oh, yeah, he didn't do this, and he didn't do it. But you have to call the record what it is. And the record is not glowing at the professional level. But Rick's body of work in terms of the amount of years he's been in the league and the amount of miles that he's traveled and the way I think he's served honorably with every single organization he's been with, that deserves respect. And that's one of the things. When you're in this league for a long time, it's really difficult to badmouth or say negative things about people that have really put the work in an honorable way. And I think he's put the work in an honorable way. I'm not sure the results have been in Montreal the way they want them to be, but he's put the work in an honorable way.
Pierre, I asked Michael Farber yesterday if, in the aftermath of Dominic Ducharme being added to the coaching staff, if we may see a similar move in the front office, going younger, bringing in a different mindset, younger mindset into the front office.
Think you will. I think someone will be promoted from within, and if I had to guess, that would be Martin Lapointe, who works there now and seems to be a favorite of Marc Bergevin. There will be certainly one GM, assistant GM, leaving, and perhaps two. So there will be room. Yeah, I think you should bring in a strong character.
All right, what do you think of Martin Lapointe?
Oh, I like Marty a lot. going back to when he played for Laval in the Quebec Major Junior League, he was definitely on our list. He was one of the better leaders and hardcore players. You know, he was a tremendous Detroit Red Wing, and that's how I choose to remember him, as an NHL player, as a Detroit Red Wing, not as an Ottawa Senator, not as a Dallas Star, not as a Chicago Blackhawk. I remember him as a great, not as a Boston Bruin. I remember him as a great Detroit Red Wing. That's how I choose to remember him, and the respect I have for him is immense. I've had some great discussions with him over time, at different times when he was playing, when he was just getting his feet wet scouting, when he was more established as a scout. So I have a lot of respect for him. I don't think you need to put a chronological situation on anybody in the league. I had a visit with an 84-year-old man last night that could run any front office in the league. So I don't really believe in, you know, deciphering people based on chronological age. I don't think that's appropriate. But Marty's very, very solid.
Do you think it's likely, highly unlikely, that the Montreal Canadiens and Carolina Hurricanes will make a deal of some sort, considering the circumstances?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. But Carolina's need is grit up front and goaltending. I would say Montreal's need is center ice play and depth on defense. Carolina's got a wealth of depth on defense, and it's young depth on defense. It's really, really solid and very well coached, by the way, by Steve Smith. I hope he and Rod Brindamore both get serious consideration to be the coaches there now that Bill Peters has moved on. But, yeah, I mean, there's organizational needs that fit there, but, I don't know how that would play out. The one thing I'd be worried about if I were Montreal is making a bad professional deal with them and having Carolina leapfrog you and make the playoffs, and then you don't. That would be the one thing I'd be cautious about if I were the Canadiens.
How would you read this final line of the statement from Bergevin? There was a nice paragraph of what he had to say, but then it said, Marc Bergevin confirmed that the position of senior vice president hockey ops will not be replaced within the hockey management group.
I would say that could be a decision made by ownership in terms of budgetary, because they were definitely top heavy with management people there. That's not unusual, by the way. There's a lot of teams that have the same kind of situation, which is smart actually, because you don't have to cap your managerial salaries or your scouting salaries, and that's where you can really make some hay if you go out and hire the best people and not worry about internal politics, which I think some teams, Chicago's done that forever. Boston has done that recently under Donnie Sweeney and Cam Neely. I think they've done a fantastic job. Ronnie Hextall's done that. Tampa's done it with Yzerman and Julian Brisebois and Patty Verbeek and Al Murray. And they've done some really, really good things in Tampa. So, yeah, and you've seen Pittsburgh's done that, you know, as well since Jimmy came in. They loosened the reins a little bit on him compared to what they gave Ray Shero. So you've seen it done. I when I saw that release, Mitch, the first thing I thought of it, I said, this could be ownership just saying, this is the team that you assembled. These are the people that you wanted in. Now either promote from within or stay within the structure that you created, but you don't need to add anybody else at this point.
On Friday with the Dominic Ducharme news, we talked about having Claude Julien kind of has one assistant who was his guy, and then maybe the GM would have an assistant that he names that's his guy. When it comes to the managerial team, the GM staff, do they all have to be considered the GM's person? I mean, I understand he's going to be hiring them, but given Mark Bergevin is going into year seven and job security might be a little bit tenuous, does the owner kind of maybe have a say where he gets to hire or at least have a stronger say in part of the management team?
Yeah, I don't think you need to say, well, he was hired by the manager. That's not how the best organizations are built. I just look at some guys get hired by the manager, some guys get hired by the coach, some guys get hired by the director of scouting. They all have to fit into the budget that the manager has to create with ownership. Everybody just talks about, oh, they just throw money around. Well, there's still budgets. You know, it's like if people ask me all the time, what about the cap? There were some teams, I can tell you, when I was coaching the league, even though it was in a cap league, they were still being run on a budget, and the salary cap is a budget. And you have to stay, you have your own internal cap. So that's to say, well, you got hired by the manager. I don't put much into that, Rod. I don't pay attention to that.
All right, let's finish up where you are. Washington, Pittsburgh. By the way, I loved your Neil Young reference, Russ Never Sleeps, over the weekend. I appreciated that very much. Can you tell us do you have any answers to any health-related questions for tonight?
I would be surprised if Malkin didn't play. That would be the one. Dumoulin took the morning skate. I wasn't here. Doc Emmerich gave me that information. I wasn't here. I was flying up from Tampa. But I know that Malkin skated. I know Dumoulin skated. I think Dumoulin will be a game-time decision. I just watched Sidney Crosby walk by. He's ready to go. He looks over into the Mario Lemieux suite. He didn't look anywhere. He just looked straight at the rink. So he's got his game face ready to go here tonight. He'll be ready. I think Washington will be ready. I don't think Washington's intimidated at all about playing in Pittsburgh. You look at the Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Wilson line. Outside of Crosby, Gensel, and Hornquist, they've scored more goals than any other line in the league in the playoffs. You know, and Ovechkin's been at another level this playoff. He's been fantastic for Washington. Kuznetsov, who they got nothing from last year, he's been great this playoff. So that line's going to be important for Washington. But in terms of health, I don't think there are any problems on the Washington side. The game-time decisions, I think, will be Hornquist, Dumoulin, and Malkin. But I'd be surprised if Malkin didn't play. And I'd be surprised if Hornquist didn't play.
And yesterday, Kessel practiced alongside Derek Brassard. Do you expect them to start that way?
They played that way for good portions early on in the playoffs. And then Mike Sullivan, who really takes the temperature of his team so well, Mike Sullivan decided to move him up, talking about Phil, and put him with Malkin. Phil hadn't done a whole lot here lately. He was very good at the tail end of the Philly series, very, very good, especially in Game 6. He needs to be a little bit better. You know, the one thing we miss on Phil Kessel, we don't talk about enough for this year, Mitch, he was a leading power play point getter in the National Hockey League this year. He was phenomenal on the power play. He really was. He had almost 50 points in the power play. He hadn't done that in the playoffs.